Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
This is a Triple M footy news update.
This is massive, this story.
Got a little exclusive.
With Tom Brown.
Yes, it is Monday, and that means that we are back for another Triple M footy news update. And as ever, I am joined by Tommy Brown. G'day, Tommy. Welcome back.
Good morning, Tommy. Lost to cover this morning. A massive weekend of football, notwithstanding all the COVID issues. But some news off the top this morning. St Kilda due to play in Cairns this weekend, which is a lucrative game for the Saints. They get money through the council and the government up there. I understand that game will be played in Sydney at this stage. So the AFL is still working through that this morning. But that's a bit of a blow for the Saints. But that, my understanding this morning is that game won't be in Cairns.
Because they were pushing to get last week's game moved to Cairns as well, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
Against the
Swans. They would have got more money for that. But obviously there's some government issues, state government issues in terms of getting in and out of Queensland from an AFL point of view. And my mail this morning, I can report here on our podcast, is that game, my understanding is at this stage, won't go ahead. Now, all these things are subject to change, but that's what's going on this morning.
Very interesting. As we know, the fixture is it changes, chops and changes day to day at this rate.
Yeah. The other story there, Tommy, is that Adelaide this Thursday night, which is Port Adelaide Geelong, I think that's got the green light. Now, the consequence of that is that Geelong, the Cats players, will go into lockdown from 5 o'clock tonight at home. Oh. And their families have to follow those protocols in terms of being locked down, which means if they've got partners or wives or kids that want to get to school, the player, in effect, would have to go into a hotel and the AFL will cover that. So it's not ideal for the Cats this week, but it's similar arrangements to what Collingwood faced last week.
You can't see that helping their preparation for that game, which is a big clash, by the way, the two teams that are pressing their claims for the top four. If Geelong need to spend a week in lockdown, then do a fly-in, fly-out arrangement, keep me out of that. You wanted to also touch on the Blues?
Yeah, so on field, I was there yesterday, boundary riding with Duck and Ross Lyons. He gave me a hard time on that. Injury diagnosis. Harry Mackay got back up, and I thought, he's all right. He just got winded. Then he was concussed.
There he was out.
Got in trouble with that. And then the commentators, Nathan Brown was highlighting that Liam Ryan could hardly walk or move, and he sure enough came off hobbling. I thought he'd done a 3 or 4 week hammy and some pickle juice.
And he went back out there. Oh, he was nearly their best player, Liam Ryan, as well.
I might need to retire from boundary running. I do enjoy doing it.
You've jumped the gun there, but yeah.
Good for the family finances. The Sunday rub crew, they give you a pretty hard time.
Yeah, they don't let you get away with much on the Sunday rub.
But on a more serious note, I mean, huge pressure now on Carlton. I mean, they conceded 95 points again yesterday. West Coast were undermanned. Their strategy on Liam Ryan in terms of not sending one of their elite players like Williams or Saad onto him, or one of the highly paid players, I guess, one of their stars. Liam Ryan was an absolute star yesterday. I think he kicked 4 in the end and took one of the, certainly the mark of the round.
Mm-hmm.
There's more focus on Carlton's defensive efforts. They were okay defensively from a pressure rating point of view in the last quarter, but it was too little too late, and you sort of got to wonder why. They allowed West Coast to get a start. It's been a consistent theme with Carlton all season, a bit like the margin, you know, another 22, 23-point loss yesterday. They've also been called selfish by various sort of professional, you know, commentators and experts overnight in terms of their style of play. That's not my area, but that's a word that's commonly being used this morning, and this was David Teague's response to the result post-game.
I thought we started the game well. I thought we cracked in, we turned up, we didn't make the most of our opportunities going forward. But having said that, I think in the first half, our ability to score when we went inside 50 was strong. But as the game went on, they just beat us in the contest. They were harder, tougher, and then their ball use on the outside. We've got some work to do. We've got a lot of work to do. Our decision-making, just the craft elements of being able to execute your role. Sitting down on the bench stood out to me. Oh, we had too many players that didn't get their job done. We had too many players that didn't execute their role or execute a skill at the right times. And then we got beat in the contest. And you can't win the contest over the whole field with only a couple of guys.
Now, Tommy, off field, there's some context surrounding this. I spoke one-on-one with Kane Little, Carlton's CEO, on Friday, who backed David Teague, guaranteed he'd be coach next year, and said their intent at this point was to get a senior assistant around him and potentially look at, my understanding also is they look at perhaps trying to recruit an extra player, whether they could look at a Zach Merritt, I'm not sure. I think Merritt's much more likely to stay at the Bombers. Maybe they could look at Chera, but that's the idea at the moment. Whether the result over the weekend changes that, I'm not sure. Carlton seemed like they're pretty steadfast in terms of getting behind Teague, but you'd think there'll be discussion this week about what sort of senior assistant they could complement Teague with in terms of giving him some support. The other issue off-field is I spoke to a highly influential Carlton person last night who's influential in and around the club, not employed by the club, and they flagged that if the board doesn't take more bold steps in regards to Carlton's progress, perhaps supporters might take it into their or a group of supporters might start to take it into their own hands as well. There's definitely some disenchantment off the field at Carlton. There's also a view from that person I spoke to last night that perhaps not all the players are fully invested in Teague by virtue of how they're playing. Now, you can go and speak to various people and get various views, but there's definitely some disenchantment at Carlton, which they'll have to navigate this week.
Yeah, plenty bubbling behind the scenes at the Blues, and you can understand why when they set the bar so high at the start of the season. And
They said the time for development was over, and Robert Walls, who's not directly employed by the club, but they've used him in recent years in an advisory capacity, came out and said that finals was the pass mark. Well, at 4-8 now, they're not going to make finals unless there's just like a miracle. This is just not going to happen. So that's one for the club to ponder. I think I'd like to stick the course, Tommy, but it's going to be some pain in the meantime. Melbourne stuck the course.
Yeah.
Right out these times of weeks.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting times at Icon Park, that's for sure. Moving right along, you wanted to touch on St Kilda as well.
Yeah, so St Kilda this morning, Simon Letley, their footy boss, has gone on SEN this morning, said that Seb Ross, whose wife had twins, and Tim Embry, whose wife is heavily pregnant, understand they've both returned to Melbourne. There's some hope they could perhaps play this weekend, maybe playing in Sydney will enhance those prospects, but both of those players have returned to Melbourne for family reasons, fully supported by the club in recent days.
Yep.
Also a debate this morning regarding, it's essentially a media matter. Lethlean took umbrage at the fact that the AFL website used the headline Missy Higgins over the weekend in reference to Jack Higgins, who I love Jack Higgins. He's a beauty. He kicked 1-6. I think the Age and the Herald Sun, I'm told, ran similar headlines. I stand to be corrected there, but that's what I understand. And the club had an issue with that and took it up with the AFL website. Simon Lethling spoke about that this morning on SEN. Now, the debate there is that if they're obviously wary of Jack's mental health and the feedback on players, there's two or three ways of looking at that, isn't there, Tommy? I mean, if Jack's got some mental health issues, then, of course, the media should be prudent around that. But at the same time, should Simon Lethling is a very good operator, be interfering in that, still they don't have a senior media person, perhaps they should. It does seem odd that he'd sort of, you know, go around doing that over the weekend to an extent, but he's just protecting his players, obviously. And also the freedom of the press. I mean, you know, people have been coming out with witty headlines for a while. I mean, Jack Higgins is on the national stage. He did kick 1-6. Yeah. He rushed two shots in the end that arguably would have won.
Could have put him right back in there, yeah.
And it's a clever headline. So there's a debate. There'll be a debate today and on the shows tonight about whether the AFL website and those publications have overstepped the mark. I must admit, I read it and thought, oh, it's pretty harsh. And there is a responsibility on the part of the press, I think. But at the same time, I don't know how much clubs can clamp down on those types of things. I mean, we do have a free press. Yeah. It's an interesting discussion point, Tommy. I'll stay out of which way is the right way, but that's just where it's at this morning.
Yeah, well, the AFL did back down and change that headline. So they listen. But you'd imagine they'd have their own internal protocols to make sure that gets the green light from their editor or whoever's in charge.
The issue with these things, Tommy, and I'm not an expert in this field, don't profess to be an expert in this field, but if you cite things like mental health over those types of headlines, it is a legitimate issue, well and good. But it also can take away from the issue if you just sort of, I'm not accusing St Kilda of using it as an excuse, but it can also detract from the importance of those that do suffer those types of things.
Yeah, so of course.
It's a complex, I'll stay out of it, but they're all the debating points.
Yeah, beyond our pay grades, Tommy. We'll leave that to the big dogs. So moving along, not St Kilda, Fremantle. You think there's something bubbling behind the scenes there as well?
Yeah, I think there's some disgruntlement among some of the senior players. They're not going as well as they'd like. I think Chera still wants to return to Victoria at the end of the year, and there's a whole host of clubs lining up to be interested in him. I think he's He'll be hot property. I think his manager really warned Fremantle at the time that taking Brayshaw and Chera, two midfielders, might have not been the best course for Fremantle. Now, I know looking at the draft in retrospect is an easy activity, but there are other players they could have taken, like Oscar Allen, there's a whole host of
it's always easier in hindsight to look at drafts and go, oh, they should have done this, they should have done that.
You know, there's other ways they could have gone. I think there's some frustration amongst some of the, you know, the senior players. For example, I noticed last night that Conker was playing in the back pocket. I mean, yeah, he was playing in the midfield with Dustin Martin, you know, before he left to go to Fremantle. So I think there's some disgruntlement amongst some of the senior players there. And it's just a, one that Justin Longmuir has probably got his eye on the future and the younger group has to navigate. Fife did his shoulder and might require surgery. Darcy and Cox both did hamstrings. So there's a whole host of issues. And I think a lot of passionate Fremantle people, I've spoken to one influential one overnight, are just a bit concerned that there's no sort of finals or premiership in sight for them. It's just, it seems like they're a long way off.
Yeah, they're just plodding along. They looked like they were showing signs of improvement late last year. And obviously they were a younger group, but then, you know, you factor in the X factor of Fife and a bit more development from some of their younger kids, and they thought they'd be able to climb, but they're still just caught in that holding pattern a little bit, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Big one here about a potential grand final venue move.
Yeah, this seemed like a silly story when I read about it over the weekend. WA putting their hand up, and, you know, clearly they could host the grand final. It's an incredible stadium and they support football, and some of the most knowledgeable football supporters in the country.
Yeah.
You know, the WA put their hand up, you know, over the weekend to host the grand final, should it come to that. The Victorian government, Martin Pakula, the sports minister, played that down. Yes, they said it's basically a ridiculous suggestion. The AFL wouldn't comment. They didn't want to sort of get involved at this point in the year. But I did speak to Tony Cochrane yesterday, who was also quoted, I think, in The Age, as saying that, in his view, the Victorian government had set up a situation where it was almost inevitable, in his view, that perhaps the grand final would have to move. His point to me was that the AFL, of course, will honour its agreement with the MCG, and that in all likelihood, the grand final will be at the MCG. But the AFL aren't going to wait this season on Victoria to get its act together.
No way.
If it got to a point in early August or mid-August where you couldn't be guaranteed the game would be the MCG, the AFL would be absolutely in an awkward position, in Tony Cochrane's view, and would have to probably move the grand final. The other problem with the AFL is that in Victoria, we do have this situation where we can go from full tilt in terms of there being basically no restrictions to restrictions in a lockdown in the space of three or 4 days on limited cases. So that's a tricky one that the AFL will have to navigate.
It'd be naive to think that the AFL don't have some contingencies in place.
Oh, they have contingencies. Yeah. No doubt you could host the grand final at Adelaide Oval or Optus.
Perth or Brisbane again,
Probably, given Brisbane's hosted, I think it would be Adelaide or Perth.
But
absolutely, the AFL have contingencies. So, look, obviously, we want a grand final at the MCG. I'm a biased Victorian in that regard. And that's where it belongs until 2057 contractually, 2057.
Mm-hmm.
But look, the AFL at some point will have to just make an informed decision. Now, of course, it'll probably be MCG, but, you know, we live in funny times.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting one. We'll be watching that space for sure. You've got a little bit of a grab on Alistair Clarkson, referring to Sam Mitchell's credentials to potentially be a senior coach.
I find whatever Alistair Clarkson, Tommy, says intriguing in the context that Jeff Kennett and Alistair Clarkson have now acknowledged that he's got a contract until the end of 2022.
Yeah.
But they're going to look at Clarko's future at the end of this year.
And neither party's really kind of gone out and said, I definitely want to be here confirmed their intentions.
I've reported that on this podcast. I've reported on Triple M. I've reported on the news. Whenever you say that report, it's not like Clarko rings you up and goes nuts. He's basically acknowledged that story. It's Jeff Kennett's words. No one's making this story up. Jeff Kennett and Alistair Clarkson are going to sit down at the end of the year, and Justin Reeves, the CEO, and work out whether Clarko wants to see out the final year of his contract. So I find anything Clarko says interesting, because, of course, there's going to be discussion about whether Collingwood would look at him, perhaps whether Carlton would look at him, whether other clubs would look at him, you know, with red-hot lists.
Yeah.
He's an incredible coach. And he had comments on Sam Mitchell over the weekend, and also when this sit-down with Hawthorn will occur on the ABC.
I've got no doubt at some point in time he'll be an AFL coach. The important thing for both Sam and probably Hawthorn too is that he just doesn't do that prematurely. You know, I've seen a lot of guys, you know, probably over the last 10 years, you know, decorated servants of the AFL become coaches by the time they're 34, 35 or 36 years of age. And I talk about, you know, Vossie and Matty Primus, Brett Ratton, you know, Hurdy, Bucks, you know, it's a really, really difficult, really, really difficult caper if you go into it prematurely, and you just want to make sure that nothing actually really fully prepares you for being an AFL coach until you actually get into the shoes. I'll have no input on the future of our club in terms of who will be the next coach. The reality is, at some point in time, I won't be the coach of the Hawthorn Footy Club, and I'm not sure if that's going to finish in 18 months' time or whether it'll be longer than that. But the board will make that decision in their wisdom on what they think is the best option for the footy club at the time.
Yes, very interesting times. I think it'll start a bit of a domino effect if Clarko becomes a gun for hire, because I think a couple of clubs that are trying to rebuild and potentially even angling it at contending would be crazy not to throw the kitchen sink at someone like Alistair Clarkson.
It wouldn't be easy to get him either. I mean, you wouldn't want to publicly go and try and go after him. I mean, if Carlton or Collingwood, the boards or the respective boards go after Alistair Clarkson, you'd have to go and, I guess, approach Clarko on the lowdown, under the cover of darkness.
As most of those things do.
Manager James Henderson. It wouldn't be straightforward, but it'd be an interesting meeting, wouldn't it? Imagine being a fly on the wall if that happened.
Big time, yeah. So it's often a merry-go-round in the coaching circles, and this would be no exception if that eventuated, if Clarko decided to pack up his bags. Just finally, we'll finish up with a little bit of a weekend injury wrap.
Yes, Andy McGrath, gun bomber, will have scans this morning on his knee. The Bombers expect at this stage it's not an ACL, but that'll obviously be, in terms of what the matter with it is, whether it's a medial or a PCL or whatever else it is, they'll work that out when he has scans today. Dion Prestia has hamstring tightness, probably won't play for the Tigers this week. He's due to have scans, I think, in Sydney today, which is where we are at the moment. Mackay and Newman cop shocking concussions yesterday, so obviously with the buyers coming at a good time, they'll have 12 days out. Shepherd also copped a nasty concussion, so that was some of the notable injuries over the weekend. It was a bad day for concussions yesterday, mate. When Newman went down, he didn't move for about 20 seconds, and
looked
the doctor
real bad, didn't he?
Raced out there from the wing. It was it wasn't nice
like
to
a
watch.
Neck injury at the start. It looked real ugly. Yeah, so hopefully he's on the mend, and with the bye this week, maybe him and Mackay might be a chance to return and not miss a game. So we'll wait and see there. As ever, a massive Monday news wrap. Thank you for joining us down the line, Tommy, and we will be back on Wednesday with much more footy news.
Can't wait. Thanks, Tommy.